All right, so someone has to be the first brave soul to ask a question, but yes, in the back. I know your name. You told me yesterday twice.
Cynthia.
Say it again.
Cynthia.
Cynthia. I'm so sorry, Cynthia.
And it can seem overwhelming if a lot of things are like hitting home for couples. What would be your counsel for couples who are like, wow, we have all of this going on?
Yeah.
I know there's a lot like that just boils down to, what he was saying, like, don't be a selfish jerk, but the two things really like that, the sacrifice and being a servant. I think when those are really the base of your heart and what you're really seeking, I think those cover a lot of bases. And so, yeah, I know that sounds somewhat obvious, but it really was not to us.
In that regard, I think, like, so sacrifice and servanthood. So maybe I would say, instead of thinking of, and I'll speak out of both sides of my mouth here in just a second, but on the one hand, I might say, instead of thinking like, okay, I gotta identify like a specific behavior I have to change, think in terms of an attitude or orientation of the heart. Think, okay, I want to do more to be a servant, like across the board. Instead of trying to say, okay, I need to grow in this area or this area and this area, just thinking, okay, I want to change that attitude or orientation in my heart. And then that can just sort of be like a domino effect. If I have a mentality of be a servant and I push that domino over, it starts to impact all these other areas where I know I need to work. So if I can talk out of the other side of my mouth for a moment, if you'd say, yeah, that's fine, that's great, give me just a tangible thing then. I would say do a self-evaluation or talk with your spouse and say, help me just identify one thing, just one thing that you know I just don't seem to be very good at. And then just focus. I would say focus on that one thing for like the next 30 days. That's it. Like I want to improve in, I want to not interrupt my spouse. I am terrible at interrupting. I do it all the time. I want to not do that. I'm going to focus on that for like the next 30 days. Now, again, I don't think you want to leave off that orientation of the heart thing, because then we get into a mode where like our marriage is just about like fixing one bad habit after another. And you and I both have too many of those for that to feel like a really productive thing. And so it starts to feel really discouraging. But if you have a mentality of I want to have sacrifice and servanthood permeate my marriage, then just identify one thing that you want to spend like 30 days just drilling down on. Yeah. Good question. Somebody else had a hand up. Right here, yes.
How would you share some of these truths, or how would you counsel non-believers?
Mm.
Like a couple that, you know, they don't even have that as a base or a starting point.
Yeah. I think honestly, I mean, we counsel unbelievers. When I was working at our church, we offer free counseling. So it's amazing how many non-Christians will come to church because counseling is free. So in one sense, I'm going to say the same things to people. The counsel is the same. And in fact, what's interesting is like even non-Christian secular therapy, they have, by God's common grace, they know real truths about how healthy marriages work. And so they'll say some of the same things without the scriptural support or without God. So the truths are all there and relevant for people. Often what I'll do, though, is I will say those things and then I will say to people, because you don't have the Spirit of God, you probably are not going to be able to do this very well. And what I would really encourage you to do is to turn to Him and to seek help from Him. So I actually end up using it. I'm going to give the same counsel, but I end up using it a lot evangelistically to say to people, this is the ideal. But apart from God, I don't know that you're ever going to get there. I remember my first ever counseling case. So I mentored under a guy who had a PhD in counseling. He was great. Loved working with him. And he gave me this case. And it was a married couple. And I was young and stupid and not a good husband anyway, so I don't know why he gave it to me. But here I was. And let's see, if I remember correctly, she cheated on him because he cheated on her. So here I was going, Well, we worked through everything. I presented them all the same principles. They kept trying. They kept working. We met for like a year and just kept working at it. They were not believers. And at the end of the session, at the end of the counseling, I just said to them, I think we're kind of at a standstill. Like, I've given you all I know, which wasn't that much anyways. Here's all I know. Like, these are the tools and the resources. And they were still struggling. And I said, I really think the thing that's going to make a difference for you guys is Jesus. And I said, I would encourage you to take the next week and to really think about where you're at with God and with the gospel. And then if you'd like to come back, I'd love to see you. But it's going to be pretty much the same until that. And they didn't. They were very kind, but they didn't come back. But I think that's the opportunity is to use it as an evangelistic occasion.
Well, and I think too, like to go along with that, like I know it's really common for non-Christians to think that, like, look for ways that Christians are hypocrites. And so just to kind of, address that up front, like just being clear with your own failure and like the failure within your marriage. And, I think we can really fail at that sometimes to have that, like, well, I got Jesus and then now we're totally, you know, we're fixed and everything is great. And that really is not helpful to non-Christians. Like, things may be better, but being really honest about the ways that you still fail is really important.
Yeah, it can really be a good invitation for non-Christians to consider what you're presenting. So, yeah, absolutely. It was not a great one. It was essentially my wife saying, I can't do this anymore. If this doesn't change, I'm out of here. So it was God's grace. It was her faithfulness to be frank with me and straight with me. And so, so that's a whole other seminar. I mean, honestly, it was. For me, I was very convinced I was an awesome husband, and you know, if she couldn't appreciate me, any woman in her shoes would have been happy to have me. I was fantastic. It was her that was the problem. I was convinced of that, and ultimately, it was the Lord just brought me to a threshold of, you're either going to see this or you're going to lose everything.
And he tends to, you know, beat up on himself quite a bit about that situation. But, I talked to the ladies about how really I fueled some of that and not being super gracious about it to begin with. And just seeing the pride that he had and, thinking, oh, I'm not going to fuel that any farther. Like he doesn't need my praise. Like, he already thinks of himself very highly. And so I'm just going to, you know, not ever say anything great about him. And really that made things a whole lot worse, because it's, you know, I was telling them that there's a lot of pride that behind it is just this, when you didn't get praise from anyone else, like, you have to give it to yourself. And that was very much the situation that he was in. It was just, there wasn't anything in his childhood to help him feel that anybody was proud of him. And so I just was making that a lot worse by thinking that I had the answers of how to fix him. And so I kept being kind of hateful about that. Like, I'm gonna hold this back because you don't need that anyways. And it was really when I started seeing, oh, okay, add that in to the mix of, just appreciating where he came from and not trying to make my own assessments of, you know, just what I see in front of me, but kind of go back a little farther and, like, where's that coming from? And so I think that softened my heart a little, and, you know, plus just the Holy Spirit, like, really praying over that and everything. So, yeah.
We fight about how terrible I was. She says I wasn't that bad, and I say I was. So. Other questions? Yeah, Ross.
Just thinking kind of proactively about implementing some of these.
Hmm.
How do you all in your marriage and as you've counseled people think through kind of the kind of spontaneous versus deliberate addressing of things? Like, do you have, hey, once a month we, or once a year we try to sit down and do like a state of the marriage, or how do you think through healthy rhythms if you're trying to get out ahead of it?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, honestly, I do think it's important for couples to have their own sort of self-evaluation of your relationship. But every relationship is different. And so there are couples, you know, that whether we've worked with or whether we've experienced it this way in the past, where, like, scheduled regular communication is really important. So I have a couple right now I'm dealing with. She has, on a daily basis, like 4 or 5 crises that she needs to call him at work to work through. And so, you know, he's starting to feel very overwhelmed, very frustrated, very smothered, right? And he gets angry and agitated on the phone. They even get into, like, fights. He hangs up on her, these sorts of things. So she's feeling more neglected, more fearful. And so that everything just sort of, the cycle gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So we've actually worked now where she has to write down everything. And they have a schedule on, I think it's like Sunday afternoons or Friday evenings or whatever it is, that she's going to go through that list and here are the things that I need to talk through. Now, what has happened is she's written it down, and then on Sunday when she goes to the list, she's like, I don't really need to talk about that one. That one's not important anymore. But this one, I do need to talk to you about this, right? So it's been better in that regard, and he's more emotionally and mentally and physically prepared. Like, okay, I know this is coming. I'm focused. I'm ready. I'm engaged. And that has been helpful for them. They've got a lot of other things, but that's been helpful for them. But there are other couples who they just have a regular rhythm of engagement, and so like a scheduled thing would feel arbitrary. I think we probably should have done a scheduled thing, and we didn't, but I think now we're at a place where we have enough regular rhythm where we're just checking in, talking, and it seems like we don't, you know, we're covering all those things.
Yeah, I think it's important what he said about it's not like a one size fits all for all couples. It's kind of like, again, just this like collaborating with each other to figure that out. Like, how does that best fit? Like, what, you know, what do we need? Even asking, you know, someone else that is looking into your marriage, maybe a pastor or, you know, just a spiritual leader in your life or someone you trust, to give you that answer. Because I know I've told different counselees different things. Like, you know, I was sharing with the women that I had one counselee that I, you know, just to mention, like, why don't you guys just ask each other a question, like, at the end of the day, or just, like, check in once about anything that happened in the day? And that sounded like such a novel thing to them. Like, but to us, it's like, we just do that. Like, we need that kind of debriefing at the end of the day. And I think I just kind of accepted that, oh, every couple is doing this, you know, because we are, and that's just not always the case. And so I think it's important, like he had mentioned, just it is kind of a, you know, you decide, but like make that happen. It's, I think some couples assume that they just don't need it at all because, you know, everything seems fine, but I think it's still important even when you're not having issues to do something like that.
So maybe like a self-evaluative or marital evaluative exercise for you is to think of this question. Do I know what one burden and one joy of my spouse is right now? Do I know what one joy and one burden of my spouse is right now? If I don't know that answer, if I don't feel like I could confidently say that to my spouse, I know this is your one joy you have and one burden you have. If I don't know that answer, I probably need to spend some more time checking in. We need to figure out some kind of rhythm, either a regular thing or a scheduled thing, where I can more confidently know that kind of information and answer it. So if you could not confidently, like, I know the answer to that, not like, well, like, I think maybe it's, no, like, confidently answer that, then you probably need to plan some kind of check-in with one another. Other questions? Cynthia.
Yeah. When would you recommend marriages that are maybe struggling just asking for help? Because I think sometimes we wait until
yes.
the
Yeah.
Oh, well, we tend to, as counselors, just, you know, like, just universally say that there's a lot of people that need counseling, just, you know, not as that, like, crisis type thing, but just as sort of a discipleship kind of, I don't know, getting a better foundation to start out from, or just getting, you know, even if you've been together for a long time, just kind of getting that spoken into your life kind of thing. But I know we're more comfortable with it than a lot of people are. Like, it's just, it seems like a big deal. You know, if you're asking for counseling, then it must be something really wrong. Well, like, we try to, I don't know, get rid of that stigma and say, no, like, even if you're seeing just these little tiffs that are happening, or, you know, you just have this small little thing you're disagreeing on continually, like, that's the sign that, hey, it's at a point where maybe we need to talk to somebody before it gets to this big blow up thing that you can't really get control of very easily, I guess.
Yeah, I think even I would say, if you can't talk about whatever the problem is, then you need to talk to somebody else, right? That is, if you can't bring it up to your spouse, or you bring it up but it goes nowhere, that's an indication you should get somebody else involved. Now, maybe that just starts with you talking to a spiritual mentor or a pastor, or even a counselor yourself. But you need to take that next step. That is, my spouse won't engage with me on it, or when we engage on it, it goes nowhere. That's an indication that you're dealing with a more entrenched issue that you probably need to get some feedback on. But Chris is right. Counseling is not for crisis. Counseling is just good discipleship. It's you being proactive. Coming to events like this, reading books together, going to conferences together. You know, there's all kinds of, like, good Christian, like, webinars online, all kinds of crazy stuff in this age we live in, right? Find things to engage in together, and that will help pull stuff out. And you'll go, oh, boy, we've never really talked about that. How equipped do we feel to navigate that particular issue?
Yeah. Yes? On the opposite end of that, what is something that you could say to a couple, kind of like to encourage them to seek counseling? People who are on the very far end of that, like so far,
yeah,
like deep in resentfulness, that maybe they don't believe in divorce and just think, we're going to make this work until our time is up, essentially.
We'll just both be miserable together.
Yeah. Well, I think we've seen that you can't ever make somebody go to counseling, and I know that's difficult for people to accept. Sometimes you see people, you know, struggling or, you know, in pain somehow, and it's like you hold this answer and you know, but they just won't take it. And I would say, like, yeah, I mean, you offer it and say, hey, I really think this would help. Like, I think, you know, this is, you know, if you have experience with it, or you know someone who's had experience with it, just like sharing that information. Like, but yeah, like, I think that's a really frustrating thing for people that, you know, they can't accept that very well, that especially for loved ones, it's like you cannot make them go or talk to the counselor ahead of time and say, hey, will you talk to this person? Because I know, because that just, you know, makes them upset, angry, you know, that kind of thing. So that's what I would say, but I don't know. You might have something else.
Yeah, you know, I think I always want to try and present to people hope, right? With God, all things are possible. Now, here's what I don't mean by that. I don't mean that if you will go to counseling, your marriage will definitely get better, right? So I don't want to give people that false presentation. That's not true. Sometimes people go to counseling and then they get divorced. We don't advertise that, but, you know, but the truth is, you know, counseling doesn't fix, you know, I tell people all the time, I am not able to fix you and fix your situation. I feel like I'm a pretty decent counselor, but I'm not that good, right? Like, that's really only the Lord and you. But I always want to present people with hope. If you're willing to do the work, if you're willing to look to the Lord, things can definitely be different than they are. And in particular, I think you can be different than you are, which means it's possible to have a bad marriage and to be thriving. It's possible for your spouse to be stubborn and stuck and for you to be joyful in the Lord. And I actually think about Philippians. What's so fascinating about Philippians, anybody know where Paul is when he writes Philippians? He's in jail. And one of the major themes of the book of Philippians is joy. Paul, in jail, is writing about joy. And he's not just writing about his joy. He is writing, telling other people, from jail, here's how you can be joyful too. It's crazy, right? But the idea is, with the Lord, it is possible for you to thrive in even the worst of situations. So regardless of what your marriage is, counseling can be so good for you personally that you can learn to find hope again, you can learn to find joy again, you can learn to find peace, you can learn to find purpose.
Yeah. I have something else. And one of the classes that I teach often is called Helping Relationships. Like what it is that, you know, I'm encouraging people to actually learn how to not be a counselor necessarily, but how to just be a friend in somebody's life. So when they kind of resist that idea of counseling, it's like, we're actually all equipped, you know, to just talk to somebody, give them truth, just be there for them. You know, respond to the things that they're saying, respond, you know, in joy and in pain, and really investing in their story and really just spending time with them. We all have that capability. And so I think that can be a doorway to change. It can be a doorway to getting them to counseling. Yeah, that's really huge. Just being involved in these people's lives that are having these issues. So
yeah, so maybe you can't get them to go to a counselor, but you can be a support and an advocate and an encouragement to them in the midst of things. Absolutely.
I'm sure I don't want to be too presumptuous here, but being a counselor can't be easy. How have you grown personally in your faith by being a counselor?
How long do we have?
Yeah.
I mean, that list is probably very massive, but what would you say?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's hard to present information to people and not start, like, searching your own heart for things. I know that was a huge thing, you know, that ended up, you know, in the whole process of helping him to figure out the issues that he was dealing with in himself was just the same sort of cases were coming to him over and over, and it was hard to ignore it anymore. So it's like God really draws out those places in us that, like, you can't say it and not think it, you know, in your own heart. And so, and just having people who are hurting across from you, but having, you know, somewhat of a glimpse of how you're alike, like that's hard to face too, with just like, you start to have a softer heart of knowing, like, how they got into that situation isn't always what you would think. And so it's just made me a more gracious person to know, like, oh, that could have easily been me that happened to, or, I can see that it was just this one little thing that got them there. And I don't know, it's so much easier to find grace for people when, you know, you see them as people and not a problem.
Yeah, I think it was David Pallison who used to, he's gone to be with the Lord, but he was a premier counselor in our movement. But he used to talk about all problems run a spectrum. So you might have the extreme version of it out here on this end, but over here is this version of it. And maybe you can't relate, but you can relate here. And so as you interact with people, you start to see all these parallels where you're like, well, like, that's not my problem, but like four steps back, that is. And so the more you talk with people, the more you do see your own proclivities and your own tendencies. And so I can even remember counseling a couple on a specific issue and pressing on the husband. And all of a sudden the Lord was like, dude, you know, you got this same issue. Yeah, and so it definitely has that opportunity to reflect. I think the other thing is, I had a friend a number of years back who said, you can't take people where you're not going. And by that, he meant if you aren't in the Word and you aren't spiritually growing, you actually cannot help other people grow. And so it's been incredibly helpful for me just to know, oh, I've got to prepare for that case. And so I need to spend some time in prayer and some time in Scripture to get ready for that. And that has benefited just me personally immensely. Wait, is this being recorded? I don't know. Well, I'll plug. I work for an organization called the Association of Biblical Counselors, ABC. Now, there's another organization called ACBC. I'm ABC. That's the one I'm in. So if you pick letters of the alphabet, there's an organization that goes by those letters. So we have a weird thing in our movement. ABC, ACC, C, you know, whatever. ABC, Association of Biblical Counselors out of Texas. Fantastic organization, just growing, doing some great things. They've got a wide swath of speakers. So they've got, you know, pastors who speak at their conferences and licensed professional counselors, LPCs, who are also biblical counselors. And so they've got a wide range of people and experiences. And so any of their information is going to be wonderful. The thing we most like about their conference, which is coming up in April, is that right? March. I should know that.
In the spring.
Anyways, the thing we most like about their conference is when you go, it's not just you take a bunch of, you listen to a bunch of lectures, you actually pick a track, and then you get something like 15 hours of focused training just in that area. So I think this year they have counseling training on trauma, a biblical perspective on mental health, domestic violence, coercive control, I think is the category. Anyways, so you get like 15 hours of biblical counseling training on domestic abuse. So it's really focused. Nobody else is doing that in our movement. Nobody else is doing that in counseling. It's like, you know, you get a 60-minute or a 50-minute lecture on eating disorders, and then you get a 50-minute lecture on OCD and a 50-minute lecture on marriage. And so you're just getting, like, little introductions to things. So it's very robust in that regard, and we just think that's great. So I would highly recommend ABC.
We're not really up on anything outside of biblical counseling, to be honest. Like, I don't even know what conferences still exist or don't exist, or all the marriage type conferences that they have. Like, we're really pretty focused on biblical counseling, but we also like the CCEF conference. Yeah. It just is really encouraging, a little more general, so that, you know, if it's not, if even if biblical counseling isn't exactly your thing, like, it is, you know, a little more general as well. That, and just like I was saying, you know, everybody can really be a counselor at heart. And so there are just some of those conferences that I just think that everybody needs to experience that. And what, like I said, whether you're going to be a counselor or not, like, it's so useful within your life in general, just relationships in general. I think if everyone had a little bit more of a counselor within them, they, you know, just life would be a little bit easier. But yeah, like I said, we're kind of out of the loop when it comes to the rest of what's going on in you know, as it comes to conferences and such. But we really have gotten a lot of encouragement as counselors, but just as people, as Christians, from that particular conference.
Speakers, anything that Ed Welch or Edward T. Welch, anything that Ed Welch writes is worth reading. We always joke that Welch is a fantastic author and just one of the worst speakers. He just is sort of stream of consciousness. We're talking, and I'm very like, okay, point one, what was that? Like, you're on 0.5? Where did we get that? Like, yeah, so I don't like that, but maybe you would love that. But Ed Welch, everything he writes is fantastic. When People Are Big and God Is Small, that's one of his books. Addiction's a Banquet in the Grave. I don't know. There's a bunch of them. Yeah. My brain's gone blank.
But he's looking at me, and he's like the human library. He has it all like stored up there. I don't know.
Anything he's written, anytime that you can hear audio from David Powlison, he's gone to be with the Lord, but David Powlison was just wonderful, absolutely fantastic. When you get into like more specific topics, we've loved the writing of Darby Strickland. We've loved her teaching. Jeremy Pierre is wonderful. Yeah, so I could talk books and counselors forever, so I'll stop. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Yeah, brother.
So, purely hypothetical. Suppose somebody heard your session on communication last night and realized that they need to have more practice. Also said, don't do it when it's late or tired. Figuring that out.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it takes scheduling. So then you have to look at, okay, when are we available? Like, when can we put this on the calendar and safeguard it? So, you know, it's about Saturday morning, Saturday afternoons. We used to do a check-in Sunday after church. Like, we'd go to church, we'd come home, we'd talk over some things, we'd talk about our schedule, and we'd discuss anything that needed to be discussed. Krista is the executive director of Sparrow and Heart, so I actually work for her. So she hasn't called a staff meeting for a little bit, so I don't know. But I would say you have to be intentional about scheduling it then. So figuring out what works best for both you and your spouse and making that work. And I would say, if you would say, we just don't have anywhere to put it, that probably means you need to revise your schedule, right? You need to prioritize this sort of check-in with your spouse. So look at it and say, what needs to go? Now, the only other thing I'll say is sometimes you just don't have the luxury of, like, waiting till Saturday or Sunday afternoon. Like, it just has to be discussed. And so you just do your best when you're tired to make it work. But you don't always have the luxury to, like, pick and choose the urgency of a conversation. Sometimes it just has to be had. But I would say, think through, what do we need to change to make sure that that happens? This is in our book, but we use a little form, too, on this regard. This is like a not what you asked about, but it made me think about it. We encourage couples, no matter how long you've married, if you've never done a shared family vision, that's a really valuable tool. To think through, what are the things that we want to be about as a couple? Like, what do we want our family to prioritize? Who do we want to be as a family? So lots of people have, like, you know, company visions, work, you know, goals, personal goals, but we never sit down to do, like, a shared vision as a family. Like, what's important to you? What's important to me? Where can we build that? And so I bring that up because if you're saying, we don't have time in our schedule for, like, meaningful connection, that probably means you need to sit down and think about, what are the priorities of our household? Like, what matters to us? And so then shape that vision. So if anybody wants that, you can ask Ross, and I'll email him the document, and then he can send it out. But it's also in our book if you'd like to buy that.
So. If you can wait till December.
That's right.
I'll just mention on that last question, one question that we were told, so we didn't come up with this, is just to ask regularly, do we have a list of reliable babysitters?
Yeah.
So upstream from that has been us in just different seasons with different number of kids, different age. Do we have people that we can look to ensure we can free ourselves up?
Yes. Yeah, that's excellent. That's excellent. And that's just, you know, good planning and strategy, thinking about, we know we're going to need to schedule time together. How do we make sure that those sorts of things happen? Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Speaking categorically or stereotypes, most marriages go through different seasons.
Yeah.
So newlywed, maybe young kids, school age, teenage, adult, out of the house, empty nest. As you counsel with couples, are there common temptations or struggles that maybe we can proactively be thinking as we enter this, whatever the next season is, be aware of this?
Well, I know, like, the newly married is always just that you have these two separate worlds that are coming together, and often it's just like this pooling that happens. And so that's where the shared family vision really comes in well. Like, you know, it helps to kind of clear that up, like, or at least go in the right direction.
Yeah.
Or we had a counselor tell us, like, you know, just thinking about how we're, you know, like she had blue water and red water and mixed them together to be purple water. And she's just saying, like, this is you and this is you. And, you know, you need to figure out how this becomes your marriage. Like, you're not this and this anymore. Like, you're now this. And so, I don't know. That was really helpful to us. But
yeah, that idea of shared, right? So it's not a blue marriage or a red marriage. It's a purple marriage, and you want to make sure that you do that. So, yeah, I think for newlyweds, it is often that challenge of I want to create a family that was just like the one I came from, or one that was so different from the one I came from, mm-hmm. right? And so making sure that you are creating a shared experience. I think the longer you're married, as I said before, I think the more tempting it is to think we don't have to work on our marriage, right? You start to feel like you're in good rhythms and routines, and I know you, so, you know, and you know me, and we're stuck with one another. So, you know, what's there to work on? So I think trying to be proactive, to regularly do some evaluation and to regularly do some more sort of marital health improvement, coming to things like this. So making sure that when you leave this, you actually do something with something. Right, so don't just come and like get information. We're big on like practical. What are you doing? So, find one thing to take from here and go do it. So I think that would be that. And then I think, you know, when I talk with couples who are older, the one common thing I hear is, my husband retired and now he annoys me, right? Like he's home all the time, right? Actually, I worked in pastoral ministry for 13 years, and now I'm home all the time. And Krista actually had to institute a hug limit. Like, you can't hug me every time you see me now. Right? Like, I'm in the middle of something. Please just let me.
No, I literally had to say it.
So, I get it. It happens, you know. There's realities that And often I know, especially men who've been in the workforce, when you retire, you just feel sort of lost. Like, I don't even know what to do. And so I just follow my spouse around. Well, what are you doing? Just the dishes. Please leave me alone. So, you know, I think in those regards, as you're looking towards the future, starting to have plans, starting to have ideas about what do I want to do? How do I want to live? How do we want to spend our time? Like, what the value of setting goals as a couple. Like, I mean, I know it can feel a little, like, formal, but there's an incredible value in just being able to set goals and say, who do we want to be? What do we want to do? Where do we want to go? We do that with our finances. Let's just do it with our relationship, too. Let's say not just we're saving for retirement or we're saving for vacation or we're saving. No, but, like, let's talk about our relationship. How do we want to grow? How do we want to spend time? So I've got a couple that I've been counseling, and they had this goal that they wanted to, like, buy an RV and travel. And they started making those plans, and it's been really neat to see the way that, like, a shared goal has really enriched their relationship. And I'm glad they went to counseling because, you know, being stuck in an RV, that presents some different challenges for marriages. So.
Well, I like that you brought up, like, the different stages that you go through. And, you know, it is universal what he's saying of just that, like, having goals together. But there is that, like, reevaluation that has to happen when you're realizing, okay, our stage has changed. Like, we may need to, you know, go back to this. And honestly, like, having it written out and not just this, like, oh, kind of vague, you know, nebulous thing. It's like, no, we've written this out. And having the goals, not just like a practical, like, we're going to do this, you know, RV thing together, but having them based in scripture, or, you know, having a goal of how you are actually growing the kingdom of God by doing that. And yeah, that can be really helpful, just having that reevaluation every time you change stages.
Maybe one more? Anybody else? I know whenever you say one more, it's like everybody stops. Nobody does it. But I'm going to wait for one more.
Oh, well, I mean, the clear scripture that like stands out to me is just the, you know, that the unbelieving, it says the wife, you know, is to live out the biblical truths, you know, for them, and just that spirit of being that in front of them can bring them to Christ. But you know, the thing that I like to add is like, it's, you know, it talks about just the kind of unbelieving spouse. And I like to point out that, you know, sometimes that actually can be, your Christian spouse who just is kind of lacking in faith in this certain area. And, so in counseling, you know, I kind of stretch that out sometimes that kind of goes across that line to also cover that. But, yeah, that's just what stood out to me right away. But.
Yeah, I mean, there's a way, again, to go back to live your convictions. Like, this is who I know I'm called to be, and I'm going to be that person as much as I can. So the little caveat I'll give there is, in honoring my spouse, I want to acknowledge the limits of what I can do as a Christian spouse in this environment. That's particularly true if you are married to an unbeliever and you have children together. You can only do so much, right? You have to be able to honor the limitations and continue to trust the Lord. And so when I think about how does the church come alongside that Christian spouse in that environment, it's two things. One, it's not imposing on that spouse expectations that they won't be able to live up to. So, you know, we can do this in all kinds of ways where we think this is like the ideal Christian environment, and so you need to be able to live this out. But they don't live in that environment, right? They can only be faithful with what the Lord has given to them to be faithful for. So recognizing those limits and so not unburdening that spouse in those ways. So this is particularly hard with kids, right? I want my kids to share my faith. My spouse does not want my kids to share my faith. What do? I can only do what I can do, right? So I want to be careful as the church. I want to come alongside them and help them accept those limitations and do all that they can. And then it's being that family support. So there are ways in which the spouse married to an unbeliever needs the kind of encouragement and care and attentiveness and spiritual encouragement that their spouse just isn't going to give them. And so the rest of the church family has the opportunity to do that. So I would say identifying that person and identifying what is it that maybe they're not going to get from their spouse that I could provide. Like, I could just check in and say, hey, tell me about what you've been learning in your Bible study lately. Tell me what's something I can be praying for you specifically about. Because they're not getting that same kind of connection and commitment and response from their spouse. And so I think not burdening them and then providing what their spouse just isn't going to. I think those would be the two things that I would encourage. For the spouse married to the unbeliever, I think accepting my limitations and focusing on what I can do in hopes that the Lord might use that to bring my spouse along.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to add too, like, I think, you know, across the board in just relationships, we think that ultimately the first thing that we have to do is like speak into their life. And really, listening is the key. I think, you know, he had to learn that especially, you know, when I was struggling with an eating disorder, and it's in our other book, just that's often the open door to being able to, you know, share with an unbeliever or a believer, just having like listening, and then speaking into their life. You kind of just open that opportunity up, and their heart is more ready to receive that when they feel heard rather than just, you know, corrected or preached at, I guess.
Yeah. No, that's good. Ross?